the fire service has to slow down. This rock music that we have on the videos and this aggressive nature of our type A personalities often leads us to advance far too fast. It needs to be a slow, controlled application of water.
This is Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast, hosted by award-winning journalist Scott Orr. Now, here's Scott.
That's right, and I will not let Parkinson stop me. Thank you for joining me again for another edition of Code 3. You are listening to the podcast for and about firefighters. Give me about 20 minutes and I'll give you a firefighting topic to think about. Now let's get started. We often talk about the fireground as a chaotic environment, because it is. But there is a tendency in the modern fire service to meet that chaos with complexity, adding more gadgets, more steps, and more theories to what is, at its heart, a simple physical battle. When the heat is high and the visibility is zero, complexity can be the enemy. So, how do we strip away the noise and get back to what actually puts the fire out? Today we're going to discuss the Keep It Simple philosophy. We'll talk about why firefighters need to slow down, the specific mechanics of a good hose stretch, and why the most advanced piece of technology on the ground is still a well-trained firefighter with a nozzle. My guest today believes the answer lies in four simple words: stretch, charge, flow, and move. Daryl Liggins is a retired training captain from the Oakland Fire Department, a department known for its aggressive interior culture and heavy fire duty. Throughout his career, Daryl has been a student of the engine company. He has championed the idea that mastering the basics is not about being old school, it's about being effective. Daryl Liggins, welcome to Code 3.
How are you guys doing? It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're doing all right. So now, you gave a talk at the 2025 Pacific Northwest Fire Conference titled Keeping It Simple, Stretch, Charge, Flow, and Move. That's what I want to talk about today. So let's break it down, starting with the stretch. What's the important factor here?
The reason I'm starting with that is there was a lot of focus on the nozzle, but there wasn't a lot of focus on the stretch. And so throughout my career, I found that no matter what kind of nozzle you had on the end of that, if you didn't get your line properly stretched in a timely manner, you may be losing the battle. And a lot of firefighters don't have control over the type of equipment they're using, but they can have more control over how they are using the equipment in which they have, and how they're stretching the line is an important piece of that puzzle. And so that became a big part of it.
What's important about how they stretch the line?
I left as a training captain, and through both of my departments and my career, I had a wonderful opportunity to be involved in training, taking a lot of fires, and to do training, not just in my own agencies, but also other agencies across the country. And I found that there were a lot of ways to do the same thing. There was a lot of tools in the toolbox. I got to write the different job breakdowns for the academy. And we wrote down what Firefighter 1 does and Firefighter 2. So on the engine, we had a bumper line, and if you pull that bumper line, you do steps A, B, and C. That's 100 feet. If they pulled the 150-foot reconnect, they would go to a different part of the rig and with a different load, and they would stretch it in a different manner. If they had a stretch that was 300 feet at the time, then they would go to the back of the rig and they would pull a different pre-connect with a different load in a different manner. And if it was over that 300 feet, then we would be pulling a 2.5 to a Y to PAX. And it just struck me, why are we doing something entirely different just because the distance is changing? So we started implementing a dead load, just a stack of hose, which is one of the oldest methods of loading hose, and one of the simplest that you see in cities like Los Angeles and New York City to this day, where the focus is on getting the hose to the place that you need to get it to, meaning focusing on the stairs or rope stretch or taking it up a fire escape or whatever you may be faced with, but you're not starting off with a different method. So that simplicity is something that I really wanted to focus on and have less tools in the toolbox, and that we're focusing on using that tool in the most efficient way that we can.
Next in your list of four is charging the line. Engineer at the pump panel starts the line. What does that require of the firefighters on the other end?
There's a lot of misunderstanding that charging the line, we don't have a lot of focus on that. I would review radio traffic, and oftentimes you'll hear radio traffic of somebody asking for, more pressure. And what happens? The engineer acknowledges, or the person at the standpipe acknowledges that message, and they give more pressure. And there needs to be an understanding that not having enough pressure at the nozzle is at times not enough pressure being generated by the engine or delivered by the person at the standpipe. But there's many causes of this. So what I like to do is just a simple drill where you can do it off of a standpipe or a hydrant. Just take your 150 feet of hose and keep the nozzle, near the pump panel, hydrant, standpipe. If I do it from a hydrant, I use an inline pressure gauge just so everybody and a lot of students can stand around and there's no noise being generated by the pump. And go over some of the problems with just charging the line. That sometimes there's kinks in the line. The person at the nozzle is going to say, "Yeah, I don't have enough pressure." And then they're increasing that pressure is not going to solve the problem.
Isn't it their responsibility to flake out the line when they pull it off the rig?
Yeah, 100%. When we're talking about getting into like longer stretches, you have 200, 250, 300 feet of line to manage, with most of the fire service being lighter staffed than we would like it to be. And many of the firefighters on the fire ground not assigned to that line, sometimes stretching a second line, sometimes throwing ladders, doing vent, doing search, command. There's a lot of things going on. So focusing on that first line and talking about removing the kinks, pushing in the line, making sure that we understand that those kinks do represent a problem, and that problem isn't corrected necessarily by just delivering more pressure, that we need to focus on the line. And I think that's a big part of my message is let's get one line stretched, charged, and operating before we start worrying about and implementing second and third hose lines. We need to focus on that first line.
Are you saying that other people on the fire ground may cause it to become kinked? Tripping over it or dragging things? Is that what you're saying?
No, not necessarily, but I do think other people on the fire ground may not be focusing on what could be the most helpful to deliver a proper fire stream by doing other tasks that are not going to be assisting in that most important line. And I was really touched. And if your listeners want to read a very touching line of duty death report, it was Oscar Armstrong in the Cincinnati Fire Department. And it was very touching because it was a line that was stretched. It ended up being too long for the area they were going. It was a proper length for where they were originally going. They were originally going to the rear, but then they brought the line to the front door. And the water wasn't making it to the nozzle when the second due engine, as many of us do, started stretching their own line and getting that flaked out. And there's a lot of variables. When I looked at Oakland, I felt like we were doing a lot of the same type of operations. It was fun, it was competitive, but it wasn't always helpful to the first line. What you end up with is a line that isn't delivering a proper fire stream in an effort to get a second line.
You know the fire service is a tight-knit community, so why advertise anywhere else? On the Code 3 podcast, you are speaking directly to firefighters, the people who actually buy your product or use your service. It's laser-focused, effective, and surprisingly affordable. It's the perfect way to reach the customers you're looking for. Let's get your message heard. Drop me an email, scott@code3podcast.com, and I'll get your message on the air. All right, let's assume that we got the first line down. Firefighter at the nozzle is going to open the bail. What's he looking for?
Well, I want to make sure that I have a proper stream. So a lot of my career, the terminology was that we have, that we're bleeding the line. And I really think that term caused firefighters to not open the bail fully. And that if you were just bleeding air out of the line, I remember a technique even being taught to kneel on the line and just have it cracked so the air would expel as I'm masking up and putting on my gloves. That would bleed the line, but it's not going to make sure that you have a proper fire stream. So we need to give it a second. I'm not looking for a perfect fire stream. It may be a little overcharged or it might be slightly underpressurized, but if it's a safe and effective stream that could get water on the fire, then we're going to get started. If it's not delivering enough, then we may ask for more pressure or check for kinks or see if a door is closed on the line. But we don't want to find that out once we enter the fire area. And we're going to be careful about our forcible entry, not just kicking in doors rapidly. We're going to go ahead and have a controlled door and a proper stream. And that's what we're checking for.
The final step is to move into the structure to attack the fire. What's the key to that? I mean, you just mentioned the door. Is that your key here, keeping control of the door?
Yeah, so the advance is something that also changed over the course of my career. There was a lot of hit and move tactics, and I know the UL talked about hit and move versus flow and move. And I was in the position of often flowing and moving, and I remember a good friend in a nearby department with similar building stock was saying that he really hadn't been to fires where he felt like he had to flow and move and wondered why I did that. And this was prior to the UL studies, which showed that there's a lot of benefits to doing that. So one thing is, and I'm not saying be a bull in a china shop and just wreck the place for an incipient stage fire. I'm talking about a well-involved fire that has already, you know, is post-flashover and we're trying to gain control. That constant water application, it's not just extinguishing fire, but I'm focused even more so on cooling things down. We have things that are extremely hot and we're not giving enough credit to the benefit of cooling things down. If you burn your hand where you put it under running water, you keep it running. I want that water constantly cooling, that terrazzo tile, that metal banister, that hot granite countertop, the steel legs of that chair or the springs of a mattress, and we are cooling as we're advancing. You may get the orange glow to dim down and darken down, but if you shut down the nozzle at that time, what I say is it's like shutting off the oven and then crawling into the oven. We stopped the heat production, but we need to cool things down for our safety and the safety of the occupants. We are cooling down the entire box when we're cooling down the fire room. The other part about the advancing is just like the kinks. We have to staff that line. I find that we often have an overstaffed nozzle by everybody that wants to, you know, get a piece of the action, or we have a lot of people back at the door. And filling that middle ground as an officer was what I found I often focused on. If I had a third or fourth person come at the nozzle, to have them go back, hey, go back to that corner and get the line. Or if somebody's at the door, hey, get up there. up the line and help them in filling that middle ground so we have a line that can constantly move and advance. And I'm going to say my last point, advancing too fast. The fire service has to slow down. This rock music that we have on the videos and this aggressive nature of our type A personalities often leads us to advance far too fast. It needs to be a slow, controlled application of water and just being advancing in a controlled manner. I don't remember who it's said it, but I remember somebody saying just be like a bulldozer moving slowly through the environment. It might have been Aaron Fields that said that, and he's brought a lot of wonderful stuff to the fire service, and advancing was part of that. But we need to slow things down. I've grabbed a lot more turnout coats to slow them down, pulling them back than pushing them in.
So you're saying that they need to be more methodical.
100%.
All right. Now, you also talked about near-miss incidents involving your former department in Oakland. Can you tell me about what you learned from them?
Yeah, one near miss, which had to do with water application, was a near miss that I found myself in shortly after being a lieutenant and a couple of weeks after being married. It was October of 2006. I found myself being first due on the second alarm. So it's far from being first due, but we were first on the second alarm for a well-involved fire in a balloon frame apartment building. Fire was venting out of four windows on the third floor, involving one apartment unit. And that apartment unit was hoarder type conditions. And there was a report of a missing man that my crew was assigned to go search for. He had been found deceased in the apartment later. But when we went up to the third floor and we were donning our hoods and mask, the hallway just enveloped in fire. I found myself completely enveloped in fire. I dropped to the floor, started crawling towards the stairs. At that point in time, I didn't know 100% that I was going in the direction of the stairs because all I had was fire in my mask. My helmet fell off because I didn't have it, the chin strap buckled down. And as I was crawling, I could feel the pain. I get to the stairs and I kind of did a ladder slide down there. It was quite dramatic at that time. And then the fire was out. I could see my classmate who was on my crew that day, and he had skin hanging off of his face. He ended up getting skin grafts and ultimately made a full recovery, but it was quite a dramatic moment. And what had occurred was the misapplication of a fog stream. That fog stream was brought into an adjoining apartment where they breached a wall and applied water, which did have some benefit of suppressing the fire, but that tremendous amount of air that you are blowing into that, firefighters often don't realize that they are on the good side of that stream. Anybody on the other side of that is really going to be taking the brunt of that air movement that is driving heat, flame, products of combustion, steam down to floor level throughout that space. And so that was a misapplication. It was also a miscommunication. We do have a policy of straight or solid streams on the interior of a building. It could have been coordinated of a They were not making headway because it was hoarder conditions. The place was packed with stuff, and most of us have been in hoarder homes. The fuel load was very high, and the advancement into the apartment was an impossibility. But we have to close that door and then apply water from the exterior or adjoining unit if that's necessary.
That's pretty serious, and I thought you were going to tell me that you needed to strap your helmet on, but it's actually much bigger than that.
Well, that is definitely a big part of it is strapping your helmet on. I often had that strap on the back brim. I've been guilty of having the SCBA waist belt not done and all of those things. But throughout my time, you realize that we have all this equipment to be donned and worn in a certain way for for those reasons. And we've had people burn their hands because they wanted to wear, you know, leather gloves and that weren't firefighting gloves. Or, you know, I've had injuries, a burn to my leg because my pants were a little too short and rode over my boot. And I was just, thought that that would be fine. All these little things can make a difference. And if we cannot, do our job safely, we're going to have a harder time saving, you know, life and property while we're at it.
All right, we'll leave it there, Daryl Lee, and thank you for talking with me today on Code 3.
Thank you.
That was a powerful reminder that in the world of high-tech solutions, sometimes the most effective tool we have is a well-trained firefighter who's mastered the basics. Stretch, charge, flow, and move. It doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Find a link to the line of duty death report that Daryl mentioned in the show notes at code3podcast.com/stretch. And now I have a favor to ask of you. If you enjoyed this episode or if you're getting value out of the show, please take a minute to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It really does help other firefighters find the podcast and it helps keep these stories coming. Okay, that's it. That's all for this week. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next time with more, and I hope you'll join me. I'm Scott Orr, and until then, stay safe.
To contact us, get more information on today's show, or to subscribe to the podcast, go to code3podcast.com.